This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com. You're listening to the best of
FUBAR Radio presents Joey Page.
Welcome into the studio, the Blinders. Welcome, gentlemen. How was Hamburg?
Hamburg is an interesting one because the place we were playing is like where the Beatles cut their teeth, isn't it? You know, yeah. What's it, a Reeper Barn?
It's very seedy.
Fucking seedy, man, yeah.
Yeah.
Really seedy.
Board, isn't it, you know?
Yeah.
It was right on the edge of the red light district. And a couple of my family went over and they were like, oh yeah, come and meet us up for a drink. You know, we're just over the road in the Hooters. It's like, is my nana there with you? He's like, yeah. It's like, it's the only bar open. So they dragged my nana into a Hooters and I couldn't believe it.
Every Wednesday from 2 p.m. FUBAR Radio.
It's now time to welcome into studio my first guests of the afternoon, a band I'm very, very excited to be interviewing on the show today. I'm delighted that they could join me in the studio. Martha Gunn, welcome to the show.
Hey.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, pleasure. So, Abby, Max, welcome. So, basically, you got reported to me by...
That sounds really official.
Really, yeah.
Are we in trouble?
No, in a good way. You got reported to me by producer Abby's boyfriend who worked at the Omera and...
Nice.
Like was saying about your performance there, and then you got invited back, and then like they basically said you've got to hear this band, and then I listened to you, and I was like, oh yeah, we've definitely got to have these guys on, and here you are. So I guess that's probably quite a good place to start, is to just sort of ask you about those gigs.
Yeah, so I guess what he would have been speaking about is we probably played a mirror quite a while ago, and we played recently. It was just like a communion night, I think, at Omera.
Switch, I think it's
called. It's like their new music showcase. And we played, there were some really good bands, Beaches and Benny. And it was just really, really good night, yeah. Mm. Love it there. It's a really good atmosphere.
They've gone all out with the decor in that place. It's like a mini sort of Victorian theatre house.
Yeah,
does it still look like ruins that have been very expensively created.
Really expensive. Yeah.
Paint's been
almost
put
kind of
on
fake as well.
Yeah.
not actual expensive.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was really good, and I think the Omera was started by Ben Lovett from Mumford and Sons.
Mm.
He's got a really good crew running all of the nights, so it's always like a pleasure to go and play there.
Mm. Well, another thing, let's go around it like this. You guys from Brighton as well, which is a special place in my heart.
That's where we all met.
And I lived there for a while, and so I'll ask you a little bit about that in a minute. But do you guys, am I right in thinking that you guys live together?
We have done in various different forms throughout throughout the last 6 years.
I lived like illegally, not that I'm promoting this, I lived technically illegally in Max and Ali's house. They had this tiny little room that no one was able to actually live in.
Right.
And I just lived in there for about a year.
And then a year after that, I slept on a mattress in the living room.
The worst thing about that though, I find, is not the fact that you have to like sleep on something really small or like so you've got nowhere to put your gear. Your clothes.
Yeah. I made that room my own.
Yeah.
Have
you got top tips for like tiny living spaces?
Yeah. You're going to need a sofa bed, number one. You're going to need a rail for your clothes and preferably a window.
A bag that's get in and out of. You don't have to dig to the bottom of every time.
Are you just keeping it all in a bag?
Yeah, Max is a bag.
A bag guy.
It's been a baggly last couple of years, yeah.
You'll often see Max at a festival. We'll all be in our tent sorting things out, and he'll be like, "Where's my bag? Where's?" But it's not any bag; it's a plastic bag, and he'll carry it round with him with like all his bits.
I did have a Waitrose.
What do you mean
bag.
His bits? So like, what is in there? Clothes? What else is in there?
His inhalers.
All my inhalers, all my, you know, eczema cream, antihistamines, all
just like
things
it's
that,
like
you
a
know.
Medicine bag. And if it goes missing, he'll be
the doctor.
Yeah,
it's the band doctor.
Yeah.
It sounds like he's already got it all, like his little bathroom cabinet.
Yeah, that's it.
So, you did live together, but you don't necessarily all live together now. Did you find it difficult being all in a confined space and trying to be creative together? And is that why you're not doing it now? Or what's the?
Well, we still kind of do it now. We go away to Wales a lot. I've got a friend there who has a house that we rent off him pretty cheap, and we still love it.
Yeah, I think it's like it's almost like it's the most productive we are. It's almost like our sort of
it's like
office.
A like writing retreat,
yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah, you know, so it's this, where we get house to, and we're like, this is we've got this certain amount of time, let's smash it, you know.
And do you set any rules or parameters when you go to this house?
Well, it depends. It's usually like everyone starts at 10, and the aim is to come back with 8 songs every time we go.
And how many times have you done that now?
Oh, like
probably like
eight.
6 or 7.
I think it's like 8.
Yeah, quite. They all sort of blur into
what
one.
A back catalogue you're building.
Yeah, well, I don't think you'd want to hear all of it, but yeah.
Well, the stuff that I have heard so far is mighty impressive. Like,
thanks.
I think you've got a really great sound, and specifically a very powerful voice, Abby. I really enjoy
thanks.
The sort of feeling and the sort of the grand sound that sort of comes out of your vocal cords. So I wanted to actually ask you a question about this. Do you sing like that all the time? Like, do you sing like in the car, in the shower? What's the vibe when you're...
No, this is the worst thing. People are always like... You know, if you tell people you sing as a career, they're always listening at every moment. So if something comes on the radio and I just want to sing along in the car, to, you know, like, I love a lot of pop music.
Right.
Something comes on, I'm just singing along, and I know that they're judging me because I'm not singing how they expect me to sing.
Yeah, it's like people have expectations, you know, Happy Birthday starts to get sung. And
yeah,
the person next to you is going...
Yeah. Oh.
So I've got such a bad singing voice. It's the point that I even get self-conscious when I sing Happy Birthday. Because I'm like, even I'm singing this out of tune. Like, I'm so bad.
But it always goes so high. No one can sing Happy Birthday well.
Yeah.
Well.
It's a real art to try and start it in the right place. Because, you know.
I like it when everyone starts in a different key. That's my favourite version of Happy Birthday.
The raucous version.
Yeah. So, no, I don't sing like that all the time.
And do you have like a sort of a certain style that you like to mimic?
I really like doing an impression of Barry Gibb.
That's exactly.
Who
what
doesn't?
Yeah, right? I think I'm pretty good at it. Yeah. I'm not even going to lie about it. Yeah.
Barry Gibb and Herbert the Pervert from.
Yeah, I'm quite good at that one too. Yeah, they're like the only two accents I'm actually good at.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I want to touch on Brighton a little bit. That's where you guys formed, and I always feel like a lot of anybody that's spent a decent amount of time in Brighton sort of, I feel like, takes a piece of Brighton with them. So I was wondering if there's anything that you think is particularly Brighton centric that's made its way into your act as a band.
I guess like just being up for anything at any moment. I feel like Brighton's one of those places where things are happening all the time and you either get on board with it and life happens, or you don't and you just become a hermit. And I feel like we're all pretty good at
being spontaneous.
And, being spontaneous and
playing with Diablos the whole time and through the looping.
Are you any good at them?
Fire breathing.
No.
Them weird elastic
the
bands that people put between trees and walk across.
Yeah.
Fubar Radio presents Ian
Molesworth. We have Joe Sutherland in the studio. You've got a proper look of Spock, haven't you, in your publicity photo?
Oh, great. Sort of emotionless, incapable of attachment.
No, I just meant physically. just the eyebrows and the hair, that's all I meant. Is that your dog?
No, so I've got a picture of me here where I'm holding a dead pretty little fluffy dog.
It's
so
a great
I've
image, that.
Borrowed a little fluffy dog called Mochi, who is a semi-famous dog, actually. They've got their own Instagram page that's growing. It's the way to be an entrepreneur these
that
days, is buy an inbred
Joe.
Pretty little dog that can barely breathe.
Joe.
And get it on Instagram.
Joe.
Every Monday. From 4 p.m.
FUBAR Radio.
We're joined now by Aldo Kane. So here's direct quote: TV adventurer.
Yeah,
that's
true,
accurate.
Right?
That's accurate.
So far,
talking
yes,
about his BBC Two Horizon documentary, Britain's Next Air Disaster? Drones.
Dun, dun, dun.
So are we scaremongering today or not?
I'm not.
No, let's do it. Let's get people terrified. A lot of them are armed, you know.
Can be.
I heard. And I've got nothing to back this up. Like, literally nothing to back this up. And, in fact, there was a flat denial from the person who was supposed to have done it. But I was working at a TV studio once, film studio once, that were filming... I don't know if I'm legally covered on this.
Well, let's not say who it was,
Well, it's
where
difficult, because I think it's quite obvious if I tell you the story.
Okay.
Basically, there were drones overhead that were getting photos of the set because it was a much anticipated film. And I heard that the company that were making the film, which is a very big company, possibly the biggest one, were shooting down drones. That's what I heard. They were shooting down drones that were trying to take photos of the Millennium Falcon.
see.
That's what, no, that's what I heard. But then I asked about it. They went, oh, no, don't be stupid. Of course
that's
not.
That sound
but,
then,
but enough people were saying, no, they haven't done that.
They would, it would obviously be denied. But surely that would be okay anyway.
There's so much scaremongering and of hearsay and rumours about what actually happens with drones. Bear in mind, I'm not a drone expert. I am a drone pilot. I can fly them legally, commercially, and I've used them for the last 4 or 5 years on jobs all around the world. I'm not the leading expert on it, but there's a lot of hearsay that I've found out on this investigation that's sort of saying, well, you could shoot them down, you could do this, you could fire a net gun at it. And that's with any arms race you're having. As soon as one piece of tech is developed in the drone world, the counter-drone world is already on that and having to potentially on the back foot, but they're now trying to develop that tech which can counter that technology. So
I think that's what I find exciting. And I am being flippant about it because I'm aware that this could be disastrous. But the other giddy part of me is like, a net gun? Whoa!
But having a pizza delivered by an automated drone.
Don't Amazon do it? Isn't that, that's what Amazon does.
It's all being tested.
Yeah, they can deliver with drones.
It's all, everything's being tested like that now.
I mean, they can't fucking deliver with a van around my way. But
maybe with a drone.
Surprise us, I'm going with a drone.
Yeah, but the shooting it down thing, I was a sniper in the Marines for 10 years.
Say that very nonchalantly. You were a sniper. Okay.
Yeah.
Never met a sniper before. Former sniper.
You wouldn't know, mate. You wouldn't know, mate.
But, and so we, as part of the investigation, we say, well, can we shoot one down?
Right.
And obviously you can see it on iPlayer now, but we spend quite a bit of time going through the process of getting lined up, and I'll let you watch it to see what happens. But it's not as easy as just firing a rifle or a gun at a drone.
I think they had laser guns.
But I'm not good at shooting because I tried the clay pigeon thing.
Actually far from the truth.
Oh, wow. Okay. Whoa.
They're not just selling them as toys. I'm thinking with all this as well, Nat, you need to be careful because if you go on one of your rampages around London that you sometimes do,
because
Nat, you probably notice how massive
very,
Nat is, right?
Tall.
Nat sometimes goes on the rampage around London like King Kong.
I would have a drone. I would grab that drone and just smash it.
No, because they can swarm. He was saying they can swarm. They can swarm.
Like
and you'll climb the telecom tower.
I'll have to take down some landmarks. It means to protect myself.
Yeah, that'll happen.
I'll take all the drones.
You can bat some of them away.
Yeah.
But some of them eventually will make you lose your balance and you'll fall.
True.
So that's a good side
of
the drone attacks.
Can I point out on your press release, things are just dropped in there like that, but I really want to ask how come you were charged by a black rhino?
Casual. These are casual things.
These are casual things.
And
did you,
this is another thing we need to know. Did you have Ebola?
No.
How did you escape it?
Well, then I escaped Ebola as well then.
Yeah, I did too.
That depends on what's written down here.
It says you escaped
Ebola.
Were you running away from it?
So your first question was about rhinos.
This is the bombarding bit of the
interview. I'm going in order because there's a lot of fascinating things.
So basically,
put him off guard, Nat. Put him off guard.
I run a company called Vertical Planet, and we provide safety, security, technical stuff across the television and film industry, from films to adventure television. And so that means, by default, I end up going to some of the most extreme, remote, hostile, austere places on the planet. And that would involve teaching anti-poaching units on the ground in Africa how to better use their equipment. And that's obviously if Foxy and I both get charged by
a black rhino.
Yeah, exactly. Head down and run at you. So there's not much you can do. You kind of stand behind some twigs and hope it doesn't actually
don't have to punch it.
You were being a brilliant adventurer sentence.
until
you said you stood behind some twigs.
Yeah. Until everything goes a bit wrong, then.
Oh my god.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to.
I think I'd sidestep it. I'd sidestep it, mate.
That's basically what you have to
do. I'd wait to the very last second and sidestep it.
What if it gets too close? There's a lot of them where you're supposed to punch them, like a shark, punch it on the nose.
I don't think you can punch a rhino on the nose.
You're not? You can try, right?
You can.
Have a go. Now, why did
I don't think you'll make much. Let's stay with the rhino for a second.
Just for now.
If you take any lessons from Spider-Man, which you probably should.
Yeah.
The rhino in Spider-Man, whenever it's in a computer game, always what you do is you wait. You stand in front of something heavy, something big behind, and you wait till it's about to hit you. I think, not twigs. Don't stand behind twigs.
Not even branches, twigs.
And then you jump out of the way, and then, of course, he runs into that, gets dazed, and then you go and swat it for a bit. Yeah, there aren't any twigs involved.
No twigs.
I would sidestep a rhino. Put it on the record now.
I prefer not to be round one, really.
No,
to
same,
have to
but
take
if I ever find myself in that situation,
black rhino,
which I could.
Now, why did you abseil into an active volcano?
When we were in there, it erupted. It's quite scary, but on a controlled way. So we were filmed inside this volcano 3 times in the Congo. in the Virunga National Park, biggest lava lake on Earth. I guess we've been in filming with the BBC, with Nat Geo, and that's why I was inside it. When we were inside it 2 times ago, it did actually erupt. There was a new vent opened up, and it basically flooded the entire bottom of the crater of the volcano, where I was just about to abseil down into it, so we had to postpone the trip down.
at that exact moment, what's your thought process there?
Fuck.
FUBAR Radio presents Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville.
Speaking of legends, motherfucking legends.
There you go. I
knew that's what you're looking for. I love the fucking legends. They do, of course, have Blackstreet in the house.
I can't believe I'm actually...
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Listen, I can't believe I'm actually saying that with my own mouth.
I want you guys to hype the crowd up.
Yeah, fuck it.
Come on, man.
Yeah, there you go. This is happening.
Fuck it. Yes.
Okay, now look.
I don't need you acting like that on the stage.
Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville. Every Wednesday from 4 p.m. FUBAR Radio.
Next guest, he goes by the name of Coles.
Yay!
How's it going, bro?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
Yeah, good, man. Good. So you are originally from the Democratic Republic of Congo.
That's right.
But now
that's right.
Reside in Lewisham.
No, I actually live in Charlton.
Charlton? Okay, do you support Southeast. The football team?
No. I'm a gooner.
You are a gooner. That's two rounds.
My G.
I like that.
Are Charlton not your second team, though?
You know what, though? Real talk, Arsenal did originate from over them sides. Woolwich is down the road from Charlton.
That's a good point. Southeast, isn't it? Arsenal's originally a Southeast team.
Exactly.
How old were you when you came over to the UK?
I was pretty young. I was around 3-4, I would say. Yeah, I can't remember specifically, but around 3-4.
Okay.
Born in Kinshasa, the capital city.
Yeah, yeah.
And then came over to the UK. But before the UK, we lived in Switzerland.
Yeah.
My family. So we lived there for a bit.
Yeah.
And then we came over to the UK.
Okay. Well, it's funny because one of my favourite new R&B artists at the moment is a guy called Miles from Kinshasa. I don't know if you've heard of him.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, he's heavy.
Yeah, yeah. He's dope,
very,
man.
Very sick.
Proper talented.
Yeah. Is there a kind of pool of artists, should I say, of... DRC heritage that we should be looking out for?
Yeah, there's quite a few that are you're aware of. Quite a few artists are from DRC, like Young Bane.
Yeah, of course.
Don E.
Yeah, yeah.
Miles from Kinshasa. All the guys repping Congo. So yeah. that's wavy, man. That's
yeah,
heavy.
Yeah. And is there any sort of music? Because in Nigeria, obviously, we have like Fela Kuti. And you know Oliver Dikok. Those are people that that my parents used to listen to, and that maybe in some roundabout way informed my musical taste or my form of expression. Are there any artists from DRC that are from the older generation that have done the same thing for you?
Yeah, most definitely. There's one artist called Papa Wemba, the late Papa Wemba.
Uh-huh.
He's a legend. Kofi Olomide.
Yeah.
Fali Pupa.
Yeah. I've heard of Fali Pupa. Okay, yeah. He's huge, isn't he?
He's pretty, like, he's crossed over and he's pretty like, commercial in the French market, especially.
Uh-huh.
There's a few, man. There's loads of, like, legends that I grew up around in my household that my parents used to play. So subconsciously, I've absorbed, you know, their wave and their stilo.
Of course. Have you ever had the pleasure of seeing any sort of live music being played in DRC? Do you go back at all a lot?
I've only been back once when I was younger. Me and my brother went back when it was around probably 8, 9. Yeah. So that was a couple of years after we went. So we went back.
Yeah.
But I haven't had the chance to see live music yet in Kinshasa, and I would love to put on a show out there actually. Yeah.
See, that was going to be my next question. Mm-hmm. So if you could put on your dream festival, who would give me, like, I don't know, 5 acts that would headline the main stage?
5 acts just in general?
Yeah, from both cultures.
I think obviously I would have to put on a couple of the Congolese brothers, that probably Young Bane.
Yep, good choice.
Who else would I have? There's a guy called ZZ as well. ZZ, I'll put him on.
He's sick.
And then I'll put on a Latin artist. I'll pick a Latin artist.
Okay.
My Latin artist called Maluma.
Yep.
I'll probably include him because I've been listening to a lot of him of late.
Yep.
Two more, and then I'll put a female artist, Georgia Smith.
Yeah,
because I think she's nice.
Yeah,
I'll put Georgia Smith. Every man in the world thinks she's nice.
She's nice.
My guy.
And Rihanna.
Okay, yeah. Now we got Aping.
Yeah.
Nice as well.
Yeah, the Caribbean. Yeah.
Okay.
She's more than nice.
And she kind of, she's more than nice. She kind of crosses cultures as well. Yeah. Everyone can kind of relate. I feel like, especially women from every culture can kind of relate to Rihanna. Absolutely. So that's definitely a good pull. You know what I mean? Dun no the Riri. Mad Yalariri. But you've touched on Latin music because that makes up a massive part of your sound. And how did you kind of what inspired you to blend the two cultures?
Oh, I was just because I feel like the music, I feel like African music is the root, you know, to music in general, and I feel like it's spread it out. And then obviously, Latin music is very very similar to African music
absolutely.
In terms of the feel, just the feel it gives. Makes you want to dance and vibe, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like that's what got me into doing Latin music because I thought, okay, cool. If I do Afrobeats, I can do Afrobeats, but it's not like, it's just me doing Afrobeats, another African doing Afrobeats.
Yeah.
But then when I started doing reggaeton, which is the genre of music specifically, that's when I started catching a little wave and people started listening to me. So I built my audience off doing reggaeton remixes, but I done it in English.
Okay.
So that's the trick. And then, people just liked it. They liked it, but their audience is predominantly from South America.
Right, I love it. It's like the musical version of like a hacker bouncing the signal off their different. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's reggaeton, but by an Afrobeats artist in English. It's like no one can say,
whoa. It's like you can't repeat that. You know what I'm saying? You can't repeat that. So.
That's very true. Yeah, that's a very sweet spot for real. It's very very niche.
A sweet spot.
Absolutely, it really is. You found a niche. You know. So what are the plans? Obviously, it's sublime music, isn't it? So it's made for the summer. Mm-hmm. Are you sort of looking forward to like quite a busy summer release wise, live wise?
Yeah, most definitely. Tomorrow I'm about to drop a video called "Keep Talking" with my bro Badda, the producer who made the beat. And then obviously that's what basically my summer's going to be driven off releasing that song.
And you've been working with Badda in Dubai, right?
We shot the video in Dubai.
Okay.
The video drops tomorrow.
Yep.
So we shot that in Dubai. And then we've been doing quite a lot of work here and there.
Yeah.
Went like Malta to do some recording.
Nice.
Done some recording in London.
Yeah.
Just wherever we can, find time to flex it.
But, and air conditioning if you're in Dubai as well. You've got to find time and fucking aircon.
It's hot out there, bro.
Silent aircon as well.
It's hot out there, man.
I don't affect the booth.
For real.
It's crazy.
For real. Dry my eyes out, but do it silently. You know what I mean?
I am joined by Armistead Maupin. How are you doing?
I'm living. I met my husband on a website called Daddy Hunt, but I was walking down the street and saw him and recognized him from Daddy Hunt. So I knew he liked men over 45. Everybody's straight and gay meets their true love online. It's real easy to do when you've got the internet and you can find exactly what you wanted. You got it so easy. In my day, we had to walk 20 miles through the snow just to suck a cock.
Every Wednesday. Callum McSwiggan. From 6 p.m. FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome back to the Callum McSwiggan Show. Today I'm joined by the incredibly lovely Guy Pusey. How are you doing, Guy?
I'm very well, thank you very much.
I hear a lot of people these days, and I don't know if you have any comment on this, but there's kind of like an old school way of being. And I hear about, you know, celebrities who've been in the industry a long time. Somebody recently mentioned Jerry Halliwell to me as being an example of somebody just as lovely as she appears. Right. And she will give you the time of day. And apparently some of the newer celebrities.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that these people, a lot of them are wonderful, but you do see sometimes an entitlement because they've got social media presences that mean they've got people telling them how wonderful they are, like every second of their day.
So it's interesting you mentioned social media there. Do you think that is changing, you know, the way we perceive celebrities? And, you know, you have the whole influencer world, which I guess I even fall into, because, you know, I owe my career to it, and I think there are so many wonderful things that come out of the kind of influencer celebrity world. But I think there are a lot of drawbacks.
You know, you used to pick up a magazine or watch an interview on television because you hadn't actually, you weren't aware of what they've been up to lately.
Yes.
And they would tell you. They would go on the Graham Norton show and be like, "You'll never guess what I've done." And you're like, "I know what you've done.
We know, we saw it."
I know, but like, you know, I was at Glastonbury. I'm like, "I know you were."
I also hear a lot of people kind of saying people deserve the criticism they get, and they deserve to be. Sometimes I feel like people are being bullied.
Yeah.
And people say that they deserve it because they have a career out of putting themselves out there. But I often think, you know, like, actually, this person's career is to be an actress or to be a musician, and they shouldn't have to sign up to this intense scrutiny, the criticism. And the bullying just because they want to pursue that thing that just so happens to make them famous.
Exactly. I mean, even calling the paparazzi on yourself, which some people do, of course, even if you're doing that, like, that doesn't mean that you should be verbally attacked and assaulted and called disgusting or scrutinized in that way. If you're launching a beauty line, you have to accept that some people will think that it's gorgeous and some people will think it's not. You have to accept that sort of level of criticism, and if you can't handle that, then you probably need to do something else.
Yes. Let's talk about Pride. It's been a big year this year. Obviously, it's the 50-year anniversary of the Stonewall riots, which is, you know, such a monumentous occasion in LGBT plus history, and there's been, you know, events happening all around the world, but obviously here in London, our hometown, there has been, I think, after last year where we had those TERFs, trans exclusionary radical feminists, I hate to call them feminists, who's kind of seized the parade, that I think there's been a lot of kind of, I don't know what the word is, there's tension.
Yeah, there is tension,
I think. But I think this year a lot has been done to fix that. Nothing's going to be fixed overnight, but
no.
I think steps have been taken in the right direction. And I have a lot of thoughts on this, but before I jump into my thoughts, I just kind of want to hear what you think about Pride and London Pride, just Pride in general, I guess.
Well, I'm incredibly glad it exists, obviously. Whenever I go, I feel really celebratory and so pleased to be amidst these people and celebrating everyone's differences and everyone's similarities. But also, it's most hurtful when it's people who you feel that you should be able to be part of your community.
Yeah.
You know, they don't believe that the T should be in the LGBTQ+, and the trans flag is not relevant to them. It upsets me. And I think sometimes, you know, that's why on Twitter, for example, I value debate, but I also value blocking and muting.
Yes.
It's a time for celebration and unity, and I just think if you can't join in on that, then don't come. It's just sad.
Absolutely.
It hurts my feelings. It does. It's awful. It's awful.
Let's talk about UK Black Pride. This is something that Lady Phil launched. Was it 2 years ago?
Yeah, it was in Vauxhall before. So
And then it moved.
So now it's in Haggerston, handily, very near my house. it's not that new, but it felt like established and didn't feel like slapdash or like a newly realised thing. I went in and felt instantly welcome, and it was very organised. I would love UK Pride to be a little bit like that. I'm glad there's a march, but I would love it to sort of culminate in a sort of a walled area like Haggerston Park, where you get search and arrival, you go in, you get a drink, you go listen to a talk, and I just felt very safe.
I think one thing that I've heard a lot of people saying is that the sense of community that came out of it, and I mean, that was the first thing that resonated with me as well, seeing so many people, you know, I didn't actually go, unfortunately, but like reading on social media, and I went through the hashtag and everything, and so many people, and it just seemed like there was this overwhelming sense of togetherness, which I think is often lost, and it's not a criticism of London Pride,
no,
but I do think it's lost, you know, in a big city with so much happening and so much, it's all over the place,
of course,
and then suddenly it's all together in one place and it's everyone coming together to celebrate their queerness and their blackness, obviously, and I just think that's amazing. And it frustrates me because I've seen a lot of people on, you know, social media saying, oh, so white people aren't welcome, and it's like you are completely missing the point.
Completely
missing the point.
I felt so welcome. I think really the rule is with anything, if you're a straight person going to main pride on Saturday and if you're a white person going to Black Pride on Sunday, just, you know, you go there open as an ally. As long as that's what's in your heart, then you are completely welcome. I did not feel like anyone looked at me for a moment and thought, "What? He's white. Why should he be there?"
Yeah.
I felt really, really welcome.
The future of UK Black Pride, do you think it will continue to grow?
I think it will continue to grow. I think that there's always a temptation that someone will approach them and say, "We'll give you a bundle of money, and if you do X, Y, and Z," and they'll say, "It'll still be Black Pride, though. It'll just be sponsored by X," and
suddenly it'll change.
But I think there's an integrity to it that I think they'll have a sort of measured response to saying yes to the right things and then sort of maintaining. So you can grow and succeed, but keep the integrity and keep the core ethos of what it's about.
FUBAR Radio presents Harriet Rose.
On the line, I've got the lads. It's the manor.
The night after the last night, we're throwing a little sesh party.
I know.
Which you were supposed to DJ at, but Mike Skinner looks like he's going to take your place.
Oh, no! Mike Skinner's taking my place!
Oh, I know.
Fuck that guy, man. Crikey. He's always taking my gigs. Fucking hell. Come on, Mike. Give me a break.
I know.
Big
love to Mike. I did say to him, we keep him posted just in case you can make it.
Yeah, you better tell him.
Every Thursday from 4 p.m. on FUBAR Radio.
Roman Harris is here. Hello, mate.
Hey, hey, hey. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's lovely to have you here.
Well, it's amazing to be here.
Let's actually kick off by talking about The Smell of Heather, which was your debut single.
That's correct, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about this track, because it's very moving.
So The Smell of Heather, this is a song that was inspired by a book of poetry. The book of poetry, well, it's actually a poem taken from this book of poetry called Heather's Book. And it was written by a author called Vivian Anglin. And upon reading the poem, I made contact with the author and I said, look, this is really a moving story and I want to put it to music. So I got the okay to do it. So no copyright infringement.
And, oh, that's good of you, because a lot of people have just written it and been like, let's pretend that, because they might have never known.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, there's every possibility that they may have never known. But I think that when you use another person's work to inspire something else, it's so important to tip your hat to them, you know?
Absolutely.
And to let them know, look, this has touched me and moved me in such a way. And, you know, you give them the respect that's due, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was the plan. The Smell of Heather was written. We made a music video for it, put that out in January, and it's done really well. I mean, people have been very moved by it, you know, and it's just a real life story of, you know, you could say love and loss in some way, you know. But yeah, hopefully it touches people as much as it touches me.
How did you draw your own emotion from it? Like, were you thinking of something specific when you read it that is why it touched you so much? Or is it just the words that sort of connected with you? Or
I think it's actually a mixture. I think for me, it was a mixture of the words in the poem actually touching me. But then also, you know, living here in London and just, you know, being a human being, you see so much tragedy and you see so much sadness wherever you go. You know, even just on the tube here, there was a guy asking for money. And, you know, if you open your eyes to it, you'll see that there's a lot of sadness out there. So even though the story wasn't my story, it was still something that resonated with me.
In everyday life, as you say, you know, you walk past people every single day that need help. And hopefully people stop every now and again, you know.
That's what you hope, you know. I mean, I like to think if I was in that situation, what would I like someone to do for me? you know.
The funny thing is about just touching on that is a lot of people have this opinion, oh, well, what are they going to spend it on? It's actually completely irrelevant.
Yeah, that's
because I tell you what, if I was living on the streets and, you know, I can see in a major way why you would want to drink alcohol or maybe even abuse drugs. Yeah. I just think support people that need your help because they need your help. And trust me, they would not be sitting on that street. Like, people are like, oh, I think they just do it for the money. And it's like, if you would sit on the pavement outside in the cold all or day. In the boiling hot all day, then kudos to you. But I don't think people do it unless they are desperate.
Exactly. It's usually, you know, mental health plays a major role in homelessness. You know, abuse plays a major role in homelessness. And for most people, we could sit in an office 9 to 5 and go home and crack open a bottle of wine because we've had a stressful day in an office in front of a computer.
Exactly.
Let alone to be out there
cold,
on the street.
Like alone, exactly. Dangerous.
I think one of the things that is really important as an artist is to try your best to convey emotion in the best way that you possibly can, you know? There's been many a time I've been on stage playing songs, and that one included, and you feel yourself kind of welling up, and then you have to just put the brakes on and be like, no one wants to see a man crying on stage while playing a song.
Like, I do. I would be here for that.
Nah, it's like, I always think to myself, I want to give the performance justice.
And, yeah, no, totally. You have to try and hold it because you're giving that emotion to them, the listeners, rather than and letting them kind of cry, you know?
Exactly. So, but there have been times, I'm not going to lie, there's been times when it's just been a bit too much.
So we're going to go on to Get Me Got Me now.
Yeah, cool.
Now, Get Me Got Me is the total opposite.
Yes, exactly.
It's a summer banger. But this is what I like, though, because, you know, it's good to have versatility. It's good to kind of give people different styles.
Definitely. I think it's really important to show the spectrum of what you can create as an artist. And I have to really take a moment to tip my hat also to a great man and a really lovely friend of mine. His name is Cade Hussein. And he's the gentleman that co-produced these tracks with me.
Oh, great.
And he brought so much to every song that we worked on.
Yeah.
And he's a man that I'm happy to call a friend. So,
nah, you're a lovely person. I like you a lot. So you're actually a songwriter as well. You wrote with Snake Hips, which is sick. The Money on Me EP, right?
That's right.
You've worked with a lot of artists doing writing and stuff like that. So are you excited to be focusing on you right now?
I think working with other people is amazing. Because what I always do in any session, I think every songwriter knows the first like 45 minutes to an hour of a session, you're just back and forth and having conversation. When it comes to writing, I like to figure out what that person really feels inside. You know, I want to know their innermost feelings.
And I feel like, Roman, you could get it out of anybody. Well, I feel like I'm ready to tell you all my secrets.
I'm ready to listen.
No.
But like, I'm the kind of guy that like, I want to know what you feel. And then let's create something that you can always listen to throughout your whole career, and it's always going to mean something to you. Not just that song that's here today, gone tomorrow. Like, let's make something that's classic, you know? And I think you can only do that once you allow yourself to be vulnerable and let your feelings out. So
vulnerability is one of the most important things in life in general.
Massively. Everyone's been in that situation where you're talking to someone and they let the curtains down, and then before you know it, you're like, oh my gosh, I think I want to tell you something too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Which I think the breeding ground for that is the recording studio.
Oh, massively. You know, it's a great place to do it. So, worked with a lot of different artists, and they've been amazing people. And a lot of them are up and coming. Like, there's a young lady called Tora, amazing voice. She's going to be something special. Kid Brunswick, who's now signed to Island Records. He's just an amazing guy, major talent. Also, Malika, who we song wrote together, and that is actually the song that got cut by the Snake Hips. Entitled Fallen, and she's doing amazing things.
She
right
is
now,
yeah,
you know. So,
and that tune was massive, like,
but like you said, now it's just a case of focusing on what I've been brewing up, playing shows and getting the music out there, and just thank you for the opportunity to be here in the studio today. I really appreciate it.
It's been such a pleasure to have you, honestly.
Thank
you're
you.
A lovely man.
Thank
it's
you.
It seems like you live your life in a very happy, positive way, and that's just lovely to be around.
Thank you. I try my best.
stay aloof when the truth move. The suicide moves soon. The who's who of Luna shoot the bullets go. Zoom, zoom. The pain is a porn pound. The pain of our plane shit. It's faded. It's more foul than famous as top 10. Hollywood off the bus park. Tend a little destructor. In a race with a gold face. Feet are greedy with dumb dumb. You and me in a butane. Super lame and he pop up. Little dragons of fat rap. Shooting they face the fuck up. Walk in the zone and get less. Wake in a fog of fright night. Eat with a sip to sell trash. Sleep with an orphan's hell hat. Pardon me, son. I'm zoned out. Cloned out. Know that home is blowed out. Sold out. Without extra man bonus. Tragedy smirk smirk. The middleman shirt burst. You wet it up, wet work. You get it up, get murked. A rabbit in crosshairs. Mechanical fox hunt. Be quiet the hunting now. The method is awesome. You can hear kind of goals the mid point of you. Click clack and back on a bunny dust point of view. Party hard, funny stuff, tough cookie boy. I'll be sure to bring my bitch bibs. I'll be eat, flop around, clown shoot, get up, kids sing along. This is all we have left, bitch, sing a song. I was born to join the hammers of sirenades. Lion cage, meat like sacrifice, nothing left. Tell me if it matters that I'm singing wrong. Another DJ yells at the falls. Another Brooklyn kite delivered in his crooked paws. I'd sooner wash my dick and ass than ask what you think. I fuck myself with a stun gun for gassing a team. You patch me in and I'll come out with a chant of disease. It's supposed to be nothing. Nobody struts when they're down on their knees. This whole racket's for the bees. Fuck my life already. Fuck the law, fuck the sun, say goodnight already. Fuck the spam by selling shit alright already. We get it, you get it, I bet you, Jesus Christ already.
To Access All Areas with me, Stephen Leng, and for one show only, hello!
Hello!
Love Island's Elma! And we also have Crystal Rasmussen.
Hi.
What do you think about the fact, like, with Love Island, there's never been any of that kind of wider sexuality stuff? What do you think?
I mean, they asked me to be on the island this year.
They did?
But I've actually dated all the boys on there already, so it was too weird because they'd have all chosen me. So
and I had all to the girls would have hated you.
Well, and I dated all them too, so. And it's not the first time we've met. It's a,
every Thursday from 6 p.m. on FUBAR Radio.
Our final guest of the day, Lauren Platt. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Great to have you in. X Factor's Lauren Platt.
You've all grown up. I feel like you're auntie. I don't see it, but everyone is like, you're so old now. Yeah.
So you did X Factor back in 2014.
Yes.
Tell us how that went.
Oh, it was amazing. Honestly,
I can't believe it was that long ago.
I know.
I remember 5 years. To the show, and I cannot believe it's 5 years ago.
Yep. It was the best experience of my life. Honestly, it's still to this day. Like it was. Who gets to experience that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it
totally.
It was amazing.
Proper whirlwind, I imagine.
Because it's so hard to get through. I know, and it is all those auditions. Could you quite believe it when you got through? to the final?
I actually couldn't. And it was like every step of the way, every time I got through, I was like, surely this has got to be like the last time. I can't actually go through this like feeling again. And it just kept happening. And it was just one of them things that I look back on now. And if anyone asks me about it, I'm like, I'm going to be honest, I don't really remember.
That's exactly what Ronan said.
So like, yeah. How did you cope with the nerves? Because it is so nerve-wracking, especially when you're sitting there with those big names in front of you.
I think it was more like, you have to do it. Like, I get more nervous now.
Just got to get up there.
You've just got to do it. There's just no other choice. And I think that's good in a way, though, because I think that does spur people on to get up there and do what they have to do, do what they come there to do. There's no time for slip-ups or anything like that. So you have to just give it your all, really.
What about this rumour of X Factor All-Stars this year?
Well,
X Factor All-Stars.
So Louis Walsh has already confirmed some names.
Yes.
I know.
Yours has been bandied around.
I heard that you have signed on the dotted line.
Well, I wouldn't say the dotted line, but it's being thrown around a little bit. Ooh. And from my point of view, I'll be honest, it's like going back to a holiday destination that you love. Do you know what I mean? Like, why wouldn't I do it again? I get that not everyone has the experience that I had. Mm-hmm. And to a certain extent, I understand why. You know, everyone comes from all different paths of life and stuff like that. So I get that not everyone has an amazing experience, but I did. So I'm like, yeah.
So you'd be
I'd
happy
love to
repeat
do it again.
It.
But yeah. You'd be great on it because you're young, you know, you're 21, is that right?
Yes.
Now, and fresh faced, wonderful voice. And you really, I don't know, you were very grown up at such a young age. I remember watching you going, wow, you can do it. You didn't appear nervous. You hold your own. You know?
I think the good thing about it is, you know, like if you go on there when you're 30, you don't really change that much between 30 and 35, for example. But I went on there when I was 16 and I'm now 21. I've gone from a young girl into a woman and stuff. So I think people would see a really different side to me.
You've got something new to bring to the table.
Yeah, definitely. I think people would sort of see me come back and be like, oh, hold on a sec. She's grown up.
But you'd be competing against, who is it, Alexandra Burke?
Yeah, I mean, I'll happily take a close second. Like,
who are the names that have been Louise?
Alexandra Burke, Shane Ward and Leona Lewis.
Yeah, I've heard Leona Lewis. All right, I'll take it all again.
That's why we need Lauren.
Destined for fourth place in X Factor.
But Lauren, have you kept up your singing? Because you've got to keep your voice exercise and
I've
all of
gone
that.
Do you know what, I've actually gone in and out. So when I come out of X Factor, obviously we did the tour and stuff, so I was singing all the time, and then went into a lot of gigging, what they call the circuit, and then I went into presenting, which I absolutely loved, and now I've kind of gone back to my singing again. I just come off a 3-month tour with Beauty and the Beast, which was
awesome,
which Beauty really really rocketed that. Me back into my singing, and I was like, oh, do you know what, I miss this, I'm ready to do this again.
And then X Factor came.
I did play Belle, yeah. Oh. And then that came along and I was like, fine, it's a sign.
Well, I think you'll be brilliant in the show. And I think we need you. You're young, you're fresh, you look fabulous. You've got a great voice.
Oh,
yes.
Thank you.
And you can beat Leona Lewis.
Well, we'll see. I mean, let's not get to it.
Can I tell you, I love this show because it needed to freshen up the X Factor. What do you think when you heard about this?
Oh, it is really exciting. It is really exciting because obviously it's been going for a long time now.
Yeah, yeah.
And like anything else,
2005
you know,
or something? It started 2004.
Yeah, it does have its day. But the fact that instead of taking it away completely, they've revamped everything and they've thought of a new idea means that people aren't missing out, but mm-hmm. they're also seeing something new and something fresh, mm-hmm. which is really good.
And you've got the All-Stars with the other one, Celebrity.
There's two, there's going to be two X Factors, and there's going to be, so there's an All-Stars and
the Celebrity.
The Celebrity one.
Yeah, which
I'll definitely
watch
in the Celebrity one.
Yeah. Have you heard some of the names rumoured for that, Lizzie?
I cannot say. I was with Simon actually on Thursday because he had his little party, summer party, and yeah, I've heard a few names, but my lips are sealed. But I'm very glad you're doing the show.
Shh.
And I hope you don't get Louis as a child.
Well, so who's... Because Louis also confirmed it's Louis, Simon and Nicole, didn't he?
Nicole, yeah.
So that
could
be
interesting. So they haven't revealed a
fourth. Well, I don't even know if there's going to be a fourth. There may just be the three.
I think, you know, Simon's on good form. He's never been looking and feeling better. Mm. I'd love you to have Simon.
Yeah, it would be really interesting having Simon, because obviously the last time I was on the show, Simon wasn't my mentor. So it was just like, okay, that's Simon. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
if you got called into Simon's like dressing room or whatever, it was like, right, there's something serious that needs to be spoken about.
Yeah.
I'm going to be in the papers tomorrow.
Something's gone wrong.
What did I do?
Literally thinking back to the last 10 years of your life.
Yeah. Like, I know. Oh, I know that feeling.
You did want to talk a little bit about the Bravery to the Bell for...
Yes, Bravery to the Bell. So, actually, it's also linked into X Factor. So, me and Fleur East, who was on my series, we haven't worked together since we come off X Factor 5 years ago. And now we're working together twice in 1 year, which is so amazing.
She opted out of doing the show, didn't she? She's sort of been quite vocal about that. What's
I think
your
she
thoughts?
Opted out quite early on because she went on to, I think it was literally just after The Jungle, she went on to This Morning to talk about the rumours. And she put on a group chat. We've still got a group chat from X Factor all those years ago. And she said, you know, like, has anyone got any opinions? Obviously, I'm going on to talk about it, so it'd be good to get some real opinions from X Factor people. And yeah, she made it quite vocal that
I don't want to go on.
I just replied, like, sign me up.
And turns out they did.
Fubar Radio presents
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club.
We're joined in the studio now by Corin, the last skeptic.
What would you like to be called?
Corin's fine.
Corin, yeah. Okay.
Who's your worst guest?
Who's my worst guest? Mm. I hate them all. I'm really tempted to just edit them out, but they have me talking in their place.
Yeah. You could edit them in any way you like, though. You can make them look awful. Mm.
Yeah, I could do, yeah.
Or do you do that?
Yeah, I've done that. Yeah, yeah. That's I'm hoping that's what's going to happen with me today. I'll be disappointed if you don't.
This is live.
Live.
What?
I know.
Yeah. So, no, there's a perfect way around that.
Okay.
Just be a cunt.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So continue being me.
Just be yourself.
Yeah, being myself. All right.
Every Friday,
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club.
From 12 PM. FUBAR Radio.
And we're joined back in the studio live with the one, the only, Davey T.
Davey Trent.
How is that sounding to you?
David Trent, thanks for coming all the way to Bundon.
You're welcome. I came all the way to Bundon.
Do you like Bundon?
I love Bundon.
Good evening, Bundon!
You're welcome.
You come in from Cambridge.
Did
you cycle in?
Yes.
You cycled in. So you're a big fan of bikes, aren't you?
Yes, I'm a big fan of bikes these days.
You wear bike t-shirts?
Well, I do. But I get given them by my kids as a dare.
As a dare?
For Father's Day or birthdays or Christmases. They give them to me because they think I won't wear them. Talking of things we can't actually talk about, I went to see Midsommar.
Oh, right.
Are you interested in these things?
I am interested. I don't want to know too much. But I've got an understanding, I think, of what it might be about.
I think I'd go and see it again. And when I came out of it, I thought, well, why did they make it? Why did he make that film?
What was his motivation, you mean?
Why would you Ari Aster? Why would you make a film that's so close to another film?
Wicker Man.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I felt about Hereditary. Everyone's minds were blown by it, and I was just like, "Have you not seen The Exorcist and The Omen and Rosemary's Baby?" And I just felt like he referenced like all of these films throughout Hereditary, and it's kind of like there's nothing in Hereditary that I don't enjoy more in the other stuff, except for that twist that comes in. Like,
yeah, I really enjoyed Hereditary.
I enjoyed it up to the twist, and I enjoyed the twist, and I thought it was great. But then it was just kind of like, as soon as the Ouija board comes out, I'm just like, I'm not interested in this film.
But then when
Fuck this film.
I really enjoyed the final scene.
I thought the final scene was just fucking rubbish.
I haven't seen it.
I loved it. I tried to look up the time of Midsommar, and by the time I typed it into the Google machine, and I'd had a spoiler... Just looking up the time of Midsommar, it said, and the twist in Midsommar. I was like, there's a twist. You can't go to watch a film knowing there's a twist because you're just waiting for the twist.
I didn't know there was a twist, David.
There isn't a twist. I was waiting for a twist, and there isn't a twist. Or is there?
Yeah, that's good. Because now there's a mystery.
Now go see Midsommar.
listening to Fubar Radio.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.